famous 20th century philosopher made the observation. He said, "It's easy. All you need is love." Thanks for going with me on the philosopher part of that. He said, it's easy. All you need is love. But I can't help but feeling that that's not entirely true. It's not easy, is it? Love isn't an easy thing. Feeling good, seeking after feeling good is easy. Doing what you want to do is easy. Thinking about what you want to think about is easy. Focusing on yourself is easy. Those things are easy, right? And to some people, the idea of love is easy. Something that they like, and it feels nice, and it's good, and it's easy. But love itself, when you really think about it, at least for me, is hard. Love is difficult. Love's not an easy thing. It's not something that just comes natural to us, right? Outgoing concern for other people is hard. It takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of thought. It takes a lot of effort. It's not our natural human inclination. It's not what we tend to do. Just in our natural state. Love doesn't come easy for us. We heard last week Mr. Dennis Luker in the video in his comments at the ministerial conference. He made the comment. He said, "When you look at the overall fruits of the churches of God and our problems, it's obvious that we do not yet have the fullness of the love for which Christ prayed for us to have and showed us that we should have." And that is kind of a hard thing to hear. I don't know about you, but that kind of struck me, and it didn't sit very well with me, and it was kind of difficult to listen to, in part because it's accurate, isn't it? It's not something that we necessarily are really great at evidencing as a full community. Right? Individually, I think we have many fine examples, and especially here locally, I know there are many fine examples. People who do actively demonstrate that love, and we all strive to demonstrate that love. But, you know, he made the comment, when you look at the overall fruits of the churches of God and our problems, it's obvious that we do not yet have the fullness of the love for which Christ prayed for us to have. So that's something that he set as a goal for us to work on. And that's something that God sets as a goal for us to work on. And it's something that we're going to look at today, and we're going to dive into and dig into. What is this thing called love? There are a lot of ideas out there about love, right? There are a lot of songs about love. As I was sitting trying to figure out a title for this message, I thought of about 20 different songs. That could be the title for this one. I went with "Love Don't Come Easy," because it doesn't, right? But that's one of the few that sort of acknowledges that fact. There are a lot of ideas about love, and a lot of ideas about what it should be or could be or how we show it toward other people. It's mostly put out there as a romantic thing. And there are even in the Bible, we know there are many types of love described. And three specifically. You know, a brotherly love, a romantic love, and then the love of God. So there are many definitions and many ideas about what love is. But love has to be defined by its source. So we'll go look at the source. Let's turn over to 1 John 4, verse 8. We know this one, and we read this one easily. And a lot of people will rattle this one off just in the general Christian community. 1 John 4 and verse 8. "He who does not love does not know God, for God is love." And we say that easily, right? Oh, God is love. Well, God is love. And it's easy to sort of let that one just roll off of your tongue. But there's a lot to that statement. It's saying something pretty profound. Quoting a Good News article from 2008 on the topic of love, it says, love, quote, referring to this verse, it says, love summarizes and epitomizes the ultimate nature of God. So what he's saying here, that this verse really correlates love with the nature of God, that it epitomizes God's nature, what God is. So you can't really understand love apart from God. Love isn't something that we can come up with an idea about and use it to define God. Right? God defines the concept of love by who he is, by what he is. He reveals the concept of love by his words and by his actions, by what he does. God shows us what love is. We don't learn about God because we know what love is. It's not that, I have an understanding of what love is, and so that helps me understand God. It's the other way around. When we have an understanding of God, then we can understand what love is. We can know, I see now more fully what love is because I understand this aspect of God. So it's not some human contrived concept. Love isn't something that man thought up and that we idealize and we like to think about and be like. Love is a nature that we have to take on. Love is, as it says here, God is love, right? This is God's nature. It's a nature that we have to take on, to put on, that we're encouraged to put on. So it's much more than an idea. It's much more than a concept that can be lightly sung about in pop culture, right? It's a nature. It is God's essence. It's his essential nature in that sense. One major facet of the very core of what and who God is. So love is a nature, not an idea, not a concept. It's a nature that we take on. So how do we understand that nature? How do we know? So if love is the nature of God, what does that look like? What is that? Turn over, one chapter over in 1 John 5. John clarifies for us. He says, for this is the love of God. Here we go. This is love. This is what love is right here. 1 John 5:3. This is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. And his commandments are not burdensome, are not grievous. So we see that love is defined by the commandments that God has given us. But this isn't if we love God, we keep his commandments. Keep here is a very active word. Keeping is tending to attend carefully, it says, to take care of, to guard, to observe. If you're guarding something, if you are observing something, right, we observe the Sabbath. Doesn't mean we sit on our couch and watch it pass by, right? We're here. And we are very active on the Sabbath in that sense. Right? There's a lot of preparation that goes into the Sabbath. Right? You've all dressed very nicely. There's a certain amount of even personal prep that happens as part of observing the Sabbath. We come here and we meet together and we learn and we interact and we have so much that we do as part of our observing the Sabbath. Right? Observe and keeping the commandments is not... it's not a passive thing. It's a very active thing, and it's a good thing. So it's not that we keep his commandments in a jar and put them on the shelf. It's that we're keeping them actively. We're guarding them actively. We are attending to them and taking care of them carefully. That's everything that's implied in this idea of keeping the commandments. It's a very proactive thing that we're doing. And even that tells us something about love, about God's nature, It's an active, proactive thing that he's codified for us, right? He's given us his commandments. He's codified what his nature looks like. And then he expects us to do that, and to be actively involved in doing that. But it's not even as simple as, well, keep the Sabbath, don't steal, don't kill. Let's turn over to Matthew 5, verse 21. Now you know the commandment. The commandment in Exodus 20 says, you shall not kill. Okay, so on the one hand, it sounds like you could go through your whole life, never kill anybody, and have successfully kept that commandment. That's one interpretation of keeping the commandment, right? But Jesus Christ clarifies. He came and he magnified, and he says, here, this is what's intended by keeping the commandment. Matthew 5, verse 21. You've heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment, and whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. So he takes it a little bit further, doesn't he? He says, you have to watch how you feel, how you think about others. Otherwise, you're entering into that spirit of murder. And that's just as much a sin as murdering. So he says, he clarifies for us what keeping the commandments looks like, what practicing godly love looks like. And he takes it even farther than that. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and give your gift. So he's moving way past the idea of killing, way past the idea of murder. And he's saying, look, if you think that you and your brother are even in a state where there might be some sort of contention and some sort of problem, work it out. You have to resolve these things. Otherwise, you're heading down that road of breaking this commandment, of breaking this essential part of God's nature of love, of what he is. It's a very active, proactive thing, keeping these commandments, isn't it? It's not simply, oh, I keep the Sabbath, I don't kill people, I don't lie, I don't steal. It's much more involved in that, isn't it? And he's magnified that for us and moved the definitions beyond just the physical constraints that are implied by something like don't kill, or as follows, don't commit adultery. He takes those and he moves those into the heart and into the mind and says, here's how somebody who is practicing love is going to keep the commandments. So logically then, if love defines God's nature, as we've read, and the commandments define love, then God's commandments essentially define his nature. They define the nature that we need to be taking on. They define what we need to be and what we need to be about. Say, well, okay, which commandments? And somebody even came and asked Jesus Christ that, didn't they? Which commandments? And he outlined it, said these and these and these. Somebody else came and said, well, what's the greatest commandment? What's the one we've really got to keep? We'll turn over there because it's a good summary for us. Matthew 22. Matthew 22 and verse 36. So a lawyer came to him and said, teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And Jesus said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. And this is the first and great commandment. Let's jump over to, again, I'll refer to the Good News article from, I believe it was April of 2008. That was a May-June article entitled, Love, the Ground from Which Spiritual Fruit Springs. Quoting this article, he's referring to this passage of Scripture. It says, a man well-versed in scriptural law, trying to test Jesus, asked him which was the great commandment in the law. And Jesus answered and said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the answer the lawyer probably expected, since Jesus was quoting from Deuteronomy 6, a passage known as the Shema, after the first word, the first Hebrew word in it, which had become the Jewish confession of faith, recited twice daily by the pious. So Jesus quotes what was and is the first and great commandment. Continuing in the article, he says, but Jesus then went beyond what was specifically asked, right? The man asked, what's the great commandment? And he told him, but then he moves beyond this, saying, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. This was not a new commandment, since Jesus was quoting Leviticus 19, verse 18. But it seems that the Jews had not coupled it with Deuteronomy 6, 5 as another great commandment. Jesus raised love your neighbor to a much higher level of importance than what they had understood. So he essentially outlines these two great commandments. And the second one, being where we're going to spend most of the rest of our focus this afternoon, he raised this idea of loving your neighbor to a much higher level than what they had understood, really emphasizing love your neighbor. And throughout his life, as we'll see, he continued to emphasize this concept of loving your neighbor. Let's turn over to John 15. Again, a scripture you'll all be familiar with. We were watching The Jungle Book with our kids the other day. And toward the end of the movie, they actually quote this scripture, which is interesting. John 15 and verse 13. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. So you'll notice the greater love. He's sort of saying, here's the ultimate in love and expressed. Greater love has no one than to lay down his life for his friends. The interesting thing to notice about this verse is that this great love is primarily directed toward man. It's not primarily directed toward God, although it certainly requires a love of God to actually do this, doesn't it? But it's primarily focused on man. It's primarily us laying down our lives for others. And he says that this is the greatest love that a person can have. It's interesting just to note that. But it makes sense. Do you find it easier to get angry or upset with man or with God? I personally find it much easier to get angry and upset with other people. Hope I'm not alone in that. Do you find it easier to admire God or to admire other men and women? People disappoint us. People let us down. People fail. People have flaws. People have issues. God doesn't have those flaws and those issues. God doesn't ever actually let us down. Sometimes we feel let down. But God never actually lets us down. God never does anything that's not in our best interest. So from that perspective, it's easy to feel like, really love God. It's easy to feel that way. It's not always easy to perform it, is it? But it's easier to feel love toward God. It's a different story with other people. We don't always feel love toward neighbor. It's just that it's perhaps harder to show love toward flawed people, especially people who have or who will hurt you. But even there, God sets the example for us. Let's turn over to Romans 5. We find that God understands that we're in this predicament where we have this obligation on ourselves to lay down our lives for each other. It's easy, in one sense, to dedicate your life and to dedicate your time to God. But to lay down that life, to lay down your life for someone else, is not always easy. Romans 5 and verse 8. It says that God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So God knows the situation that we're in. He knows that sometimes we have to lay down our lives in the sense of giving of ourselves, sacrificing our time. Some have ultimately sacrificed themselves for others. God knows what it is to do that. And he knows what it is to do that for people who did not appreciate it and who did not deserve it. And he's done that for us. And he's demonstrated what it is that we should be doing toward each other. You know, it's easier to feel lovingly toward God than toward man, because God loved us first, as it says here. While we were still sinners, God loved us. And so we love him. We love him because he loved us first. And it says that over in 1 John 4, verse 19. So we love him. He loved us, and so, yes, we love him. We reciprocate that. It's easy to reciprocate that because it's coming from him. It's not always coming from other people when we're obligated to show love toward those people. Again, quoting the good news. Well, conceptually, just going back, we're very driven by feeling, aren't we? It's easier to feel love toward God. And so it makes it easier to act on that love. We don't always feel love toward other people. And it's hard when you don't feel lovingly toward somebody else. It's hard to act in love toward that person. It's a difficult thing to do because we're very feelings driven. We're very emotion driven, right? We're very self driven. And so if the self doesn't feel like doing something for someone, for showing love toward another person, the odds are that it's going to be very difficult to actually go and do that. But quoting a Good News article here, it says, when the Bible speaks of love, note that love has more to do with what we do than what we think or feel. For example, consider the golden rule in Matthew 7:12, usually paraphrased as, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's not about feel unto others or think unto others or all of, you know, the things that generally tend to motivate us. It's about doing unto others. Are we doing unto others, or are we simply feeling and thinking about and considering, yeah, I ought to get around to doing something. I ought to get around to acting on something. If we're not following through on action, we're not doers, are we? And love really is that. It's the action. It's the action put out there. Again, quoting Mr. Luger, he said, it's obvious that we do not yet have the fullness of the love for which Christ prayed for us to have. We don't necessarily have that and show that all the time in the way that Jesus Christ wants us to. We don't have that tendency as humans. It's just not our natural place. But it's something we need to be striving for, especially as God's people. Something that we should always be moving toward and developing and growing in. Because it is... It's the primary evidence that Jesus gave, said would be the evidence of his church to the world, right? That they would know us. They'll know that we're his disciples because of the love that we have for each other. So if we fail in that aspect, we're failing to demonstrate that. So it's something that we need to be developing, that we should have as a people. I personally feel like you could argue that in the early 90s, there was a great test of the church, of the church's love toward God. A great test of that first commandment. And ever since then, a lot of the tests have really fallen in that second great commandment category, where we've often failed to not really love each other the way that we should. But we have good examples of that. We have good examples of the true kind of love that we should have. If you turn over to John 3, we'll just look at 2. John 3 and verse 16. Now you know this verse, and I'm going to ask you to not pretend that you know it. John 3:16. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish. So I want you to consider for just a second, let's say somebody dear to you, somebody near and close to you, a child of yours, said, hey, look, I need to go do something. And some people, I think the closest analogy that maybe people would really face in this day and age is the military. Although I don't think anybody in here has necessarily had to deal with that. It's possible. But let's say somebody comes to you and says, somebody who's near and dear to you, somebody close to you, comes to you and says, look, I need to go help these people. I need to go serve in this way. And there's a very good chance I won't be coming home. The idea is terrifying, right? Especially if you have a child. It's terrifying. Sorry, it scares me a little. But would you allow it? Is that something that you would want to have happen to a child? But even so, that's what God allowed. And he did that. And he did that because of the love that he has toward us and toward all of us. And it's a demonstration of that love that he has. He loves us so dearly that he was willing to do that, willing to let that happen, willing to allow it because he cares for us. Right? He's willing to sacrifice quite a bit. It's something we need to be taking on. Again, it's that nature. That's the nature that he is describing, that he's codified for us, that he shows us by his actions. That's the nature that we need to take on. And let's turn over to Philippians 2. We've been there a couple times today, I think. Philippians 2 and verse 5. I think we've read 1 through 4 a few times here. Philippians 2:5 says, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant and coming in the likeness of men. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. Which, again, let's say somebody came to you and said, okay, look, I'm going to give you two options. Here's where you can go with your life. Option one, I'm going to give you all of the finest things in life. I'll give you a good home, a quiet, beautiful town. I'll give you unlimited wealth. I'll give you the power to carry out whatever it is you desire, whatever things you want to do, good things, I'm sure. But I'll give you the power and the wealth and all of the means to do whatever you want to do with your life. Whatever it is you want to carry out. I'll give you every good thing. I'll give you status. I'll give you whatever you want. That's all yours. Or option two, you're going to love this one. How about you spend the remainder of your life taking care of people in some small tribal village in some impoverished country that's hostile toward you, where they'll probably beat and kill you before it's all said and done? Which one? Option A, option B. And Jesus Christ chose option B. He said, I'll do this. Because, again, he's demonstrating his love. He's demonstrating that nature that he has. It's simply that it's God's nature to show an abundance of love toward indifferent, toward flawed, toward hostile people. And we need to take on that same nature, especially toward each other, who are not hostile or indifferent. It should be easy within this room, right? I mean, this is a group of people that cares about one another deeply. So it should be less of a challenge in that sense for us to be able to really practice this nature, to be able to put on this nature of caring for one another, of practicing this abundance of love. Because eventually we're going to need it in the circumstances of being able to show that same sort of love toward people who are either indifferent or extremely hostile toward us. Those situations will come up. And we need to be practicing here and now while we can with each other, so that ultimately we'll be able to show that same kind of love that Jesus Christ was able to show, that God the Father has shown us. It's just part of that nature that we need to put on. But again, it doesn't come easy, right? Love doesn't come easy, and love's not an easy thing. And just by echoing Mr. Luker's words from his message last week that we heard, he said, don't forget every day to pray, Father, more than anything, help us to grow in your love so that we do not fail.